Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. I want to welcome to the show Chief Lance Edwards, who's with the Bridgeport Fire Department. Good morning, Chief Edwards. Welcome back. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here. So there was a situation over the weekend where an electric bus caught on fire. And when you look at the photos of it, I mean, Chief Edwards, holy moly, they basically had to allow the fire to just destroy it. I mean, it was burnt to a crisp. There was nothing left of the bus, just the skeleton of the bus. It was pretty unbelievable. Luckily, there were no people on that bus. There was no one working there. It was in the lot. So other than people with smoke inhalation or heat exhaustion, there was really no major issue. Great news. With that being said, though, could you explain to people how firefighters currently have to attack blazes that involve electric vehicles?
Sure. I think by now most people have seen the video that you just described. And one of the things that Hamden Fire Department chose to do was take a defensive attack opposed to an offensive attack. So instead of trying to apply large amounts of water, basically in the Bridgeport Fire Department, that's our course of action. So whether it's an electric bus or an electric passenger vehicle, we have a very good working relationship with the Greater Bridgeport Transit Authority. So we're in constant communication with the hazards associated with lithium batteries. So that approach to a fire has got to be totally different than your typical internal combustion engine. Your typical passenger vehicle that runs on gasoline probably requires 300 gallons of water to extinguish.
Wow.
An electric vehicle, just looking at an electric passenger vehicle, you're looking at anywhere from 3,000 to 8,000 gallons of water. So when you look at that amount of water, we don't have apparatus that carries that much water. So you're talking about establishing a water supply from a nearest hydrant. So our approach and the amount of resources required to extinguish this fire is totally different. And you take into account that the passenger vehicle could be in a garage. It's one thing if it's out in a parking lot. It's still going to require that amount of water. But if it's in a garage, now it goes from a passenger vehicle fire to a structure fire.
Right.
So now you have a life hazard involved, and it changes the total dynamics of firefighting for the fire service nationwide.
So back up for a quick second, Chief Edwards, for people who aren't familiar, why does it take so much water? I mean, hundreds, thousands of gallons of water. Why does it take that much to put out these kinds of fires?
Well, when you're dealing with lithium ion, most of the time the fire comes from either damage to the battery or if there's a short circuit. And when this occurs, you have heat and pressure that builds up. There's a chemical reaction, and it generates more heat, more pressure, making it more difficult to extinguish. So we've seen videos of fire departments who have applied thousands of gallons of water. They call for a tow truck. The tow truck comes. It puts the electric vehicle on to the tow truck, whether it be a flatbed or if they tow it. And en route to the facility, it reignites on the road. So it's these lithium batteries add a hazard that I think a lot of auto manufacturers did not take into consideration when they were talking about going to a greener society.
So we're talking this morning to Chief Edwards, who's the chief of the fire department in Bridgeport, and we're talking about these electric vehicle fires because we just saw a massive one in Hamden. Again, very lucky in this situation. There was nobody really impacted by it. There were no structures near it. No other buses caught fire. It was just this one bus. So the attack, the approach that Hamden decided to do probably made the most sense. Instead of wasting water, not to mention we're in a drought, it probably made sense to just let it burn until there was nothing else to burn. But Chief Edwards, are you nervous? Are you worried? Because, you know, you talk to our own governor, you talk to governors in New Jersey, you know, other parts of the country. There's this goal of going green, going, you know, totally green by the year 2050. So give or take 25 more years, we're going to see a lot more electric vehicles on the road, probably the majority. At least that's the goal in mind. Does that make you nervous, concerned?
It does. It makes us nervous, but unfortunately, that's part of the inherent dangers of being a firefighter. You always know that every day, right around the corner, there's going to be some new invention, some new technology that sounds great, but the hidden hazards haven't been determined yet. And when it comes to dealing with electric vehicles, we certainly know that down the road, there's going to be a higher percentage of them on the road. So we're going to be dealing with much more fires related to EV vehicles opposed to the internal combustion. And we just need to be better prepared. And as long as we train, we get the information out, I feel confident that the Bridgeport Fire Department, as well as the other local departments here in Fairfield County, will be able to deal with the hazards associated with electric vehicles.
I'm about to ask something that probably makes me look really dumb, okay? So I don't want you to judge me, okay? I'm just putting it out there, okay? So, you know, when you watch on television these huge forest fires, you see those massive planes and they drop the what looks like red smoke, like dust,
yes,
over the fires and stuff. Do we know if there's anything besides water that could contain this kind of a fire? So like, okay, so we've created a monster. We've got EVs now. Great.
Yes.
We've got these lithium batteries. They're a problem. Great. Have we come up with a solution to put out those fires? Like, is there something better than water and something that we don't need thousands of gallons of to put out those fires? Like, do we know if there's anything being worked on in that regard or something that exists? We just don't have it in-house?
Well, if you break it down to smaller terms, typically, you know, obviously most people are very familiar with fire extinguishers, and there's different types of fire extinguishers. So if you have an electrical fire, there's certain extinguishers that are designed to deal with electrical fires, and that would be either CO2 or dry chem. The problem is they're manufactured to deal with small electrical fires, not passenger vehicle fires, not electric buses. That's the problem. So we don't carry that type of detergent or fire retardant material on the fire apparatus to deal with this. So we're forced to use water, and that's where we end up utilizing 3,000 to 8,000 gallons of water. And I will say this, Melissa, for the majority of your listeners, I'm sure a good percentage of them have EV vehicles. Right now, I know Tesla, Nissan, when they send out, if you purchase one of those vehicles, it also comes with a first responder's guide. And if you look inside that guide, it tells you how to deal with a fire. And in there, it's explicit. It tells you to call 911 and be prepared for the fire department to utilize anywhere from 3,000 to 8,000 gallons of water. So if you buy a regular internal combustion engine vehicle, you look in the owner's manual, it doesn't say anything in there about fire hazard or how much water would be required to extinguish that fire. So they're at least recognizing that it's an issue, and they're trying to inform the people who are purchasing these vehicles. The problem is no one goes through the owner's manual with a fine-tooth comb.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing.
They are providing the information. It's just a matter of you going through the first responder's guide and noticing it, and then say, oh, this is something I need to be concerned with.
Mm-hmm. It's like reading the fine print on any medication, like how many people do it. Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point, but it's, you know, it's still how to get the information out. I guess we talk to people like you. We have a couple more minutes with Fire Chief Lance Edwards out of Bridgeport this morning talking about the Hamden electric bus fire that happened over the weekend, what it could mean for more EVs on our roads in the coming years. So, Chief Edwards, you had mentioned that in Bridgeport, specifically for your department, you guys train for these kinds of fires. How do you train for this? Like, what does that mean? What does that look like?
Really, it has a lot to do with establishing a water supply. Like I mentioned before, it's going to take anywhere from 3,000 to 8,000 gallons of water. And typically, when you're looking at that amount of water, we're talking about laying hose lines from a hydrant to a fire truck, and then hose lines that are going to be staffed with firefighters applying water from a safe distance. So they need to get very, very comfortable, because we have certain areas where the hydrants may be 1,000 feet away from where this fire is taking place, and also making sure that our safety officer is on point when it comes to managing an incident. So I will say this, the Bridgeport Fire Department is very lucky to have a on-duty 24-hour safety officer, and his sole responsibility, or hers, based on who's working that day, is to make sure that all of the safety parameters that the Bridgeport Fire Department has in place is being followed. So when they respond to an EV vehicle fire, they're making sure that everyone has their PPE on, they have all their gear, they have their mask on, and the water is being applied from a safe distance. So the application of water is not going to be the same as an internal combustion fire. Well, you'll see firefighters go right up to the vehicle. We try to apply the water from a safe distance and make sure that we're not taking in those toxic gases.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question. And I know that EVs are still relatively new, considering. But how common are they in the time that you've been in the fire department? How many times do you run into EV situations?
Over the course of my work day, just the simple conversation of EV vehicles, which years ago never took place. Once a month, you'd have a conversation. Now,
really? Yeah.
It's a couple of times. Now, you're constantly talking about the inherent dangers that come along with dealing with EV vehicle fires.
Really? You guys talk about it on a daily basis?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you have to, because the numbers are increasing at a greater rate. They're not going to go down. And if anything, you're looking at down the road. At some point, you're probably going to see, because there's not enough lithium for them to produce. 50 years down the road, they're going to be on to some other technology, whether it's hydrogen or some other type of gas. So we try to be proactive when it comes to keeping our members as safe as possible. So you have to kind of be two steps ahead of where we are right now.
And the only other thing I have for you, Chief Edwards, is, like I said, in Hamden's situation, there was nobody on that bus, thank God. If a lithium battery catches fire or creates a fire, how quickly does it then spread throughout the car? Because my biggest concern is I've seen people before where they're driving, they see the smoke, and they're like, oh, man, my car must be overheating. And they pull over and they la-di-da, they go to check it, they open it, and boom, you know, something is erupting. But my concern is if we're essentially, for some departments, allowing the fire to just go, how long do people have to get out of their cars if that lithium battery catches fire and they're driving or they're in their cars?
If they're driving in their vehicle or stopped at a traffic light or a stop sign, and if they notice any type of, because initially you'll see white smoke. If you notice anything out of whack, pull the vehicle over and get out and call 911. Don't try to say, oh, you know, if you're on a highway, I'm going to wait until I get to the next exit or get to the next gas station. Pull the car over and call 911 immediately. Because remember, there's a lot of plastic in the vehicles, and the plastics ignite extremely quick. And the chemical reaction, when you start talking about lithium ion, is very, very dangerous. So it continues to create heat and pressure, and before you know it, the fire is out of control. And then you run into the issue of reignition. So even after we start applying the water, we're going to be there for quite some time because we're dealing with an energized device, and that's still continuing to generate pressure and heat, which is going to require some type of extinguishing agent.
Wow. Unbelievable. And this is a conversation, according to Chief Edwards, that's happening on a daily basis, multiple times a day among firefighters in Bridgeport and probably across, I would think, the country as we talk more and more about EVs.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure. Because right now, Bridgeport has the first two electric buses that were brought into the state. Greater Bridgeport Transit Authority, we're giving those two buses.
Yep.
And remember, the buses don't stay in Bridgeport. They go to Stratford, they go to Milford, they go down to Norwalk. So most municipalities along the coast are concerned because they know these buses are not just staying in the city of Bridgeport. They travel outside of the city of Bridgeport to pick up passengers.
Which puts them at risk. Absolutely.
Exactly. So we're in constant communication with each other just to make sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to dealing with these types of hazards on the road.
Well, we love that we have people on our side, people like you, Chief Edwards. And I thank you so much for the work that you and everybody at Bridgeport's Fire Department does. Thank you so much for having these conversations and for bringing them to the airwaves. Thank you.
Not a problem at all. You enjoy your day, Melissa.
Thank you, Chief Edwards. Always love to talk to you. Chief Lance Edwards with the Bridgeport Fire Department here on WICC.
Look at what's happening across Connecticut. Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Governor Lamont, I really appreciate you coming back on the show this morning after we having some tech issues last week. How are you?
Morning, Melissa. We're back.
I'm so glad. No, I really am, because I know we had a lot of questions and people look forward to hearing from you. So I thank you so much for coming back on the show in such a short notice. I'm going to actually repeat some of the questions just to make sure we get the answers. I know you answered a couple of them, but I'm going to go back through them. First and foremost, in recent news, we were talking about how EMT and ambulance workers, there's a real strain across Connecticut. Some communities are actually combining their departments because of financial reasons and because we just don't have the staffing that we need in order to the manpower we need for these EMT workers to get the jobs done. What are we doing in Connecticut to mend that problem?
Yeah, great question. I mean, first of all, we have a shortage across the board, be it nurses, be it state police and EMT. What we're doing is making it easier to become an EMT, trying to recruit and train more people so they become EMTs. I love the fact that some of our communities are trying to combine resources so they get a little more depth there in terms of what they need, but and paying a little more. Those are all ways you recruit and hire the best.
And we had a question from Mike in Beacon Falls. He was asking about the Valley Fire Chief Regional Training School. This was something that you had promised in your campaign when you, if you were to take office, that you wanted to get the funding in order to get that completed. It still has not happened. Do you have plans for that to still happen? And if so, when can we expect it?
Yeah, Mike, it's certainly something we're looking at with your legislative leadership, because they've got a fair amount of a bonding authority that they can prioritize. For me, for the Valley, it was two-way rail service. It was upgrading the rail stations, brownfield remediation so we can get more housing and development in the downtown areas. That was the biggest priority for me, but I am working with your legislative leaders right there at Beacon Falls in the Valley to see what other priorities they have, like the fire training.
And this morning, we've been talking a lot about electric vehicles. As I'm sure you heard, Governor Lamont, over the weekend, there was a Hamden situation where an electric bus caught fire. And essentially, the best way that they could handle it, there were no people there. Luckily, there were no buildings around and no other buses, was to just let it burn until essentially there was nothing left to burn. Because there's so much water that is needed to put out those kind of battery fires. And firefighters that we've spoken to since this happened said that this is a daily thought in their minds. The more and more we push for electric vehicles on the roads, the more and more the chances of these fires could happen. So I'm curious, do you worry about electric vehicle fires as we get more of them distributed across Connecticut? And will the state be investing in ways to inform the public about the risks of driving or in riding in these kinds of vehicles?
Yeah, Melissa, well, it may be a daily thought, but it's an incredibly rare event. But we're about to, embark on a lot of new all-EV electric, buses, as well as what you see going on in the automotive fleet. So we are investigating this in a serious way, checking across the nation in terms of whether this is symptomatic of other things going on in other states, or is there something unique about this situation? Give us a little bit of time to get back to you on that.
Okay. We're talking this morning to Governor Lamont, taking your questions. Linda in Trumbull had a question about senior fraud prevention. There was an established 10-member task force, as you know, to study ways to protect seniors from fraud. And this session, the legislature may consider the task force's recommendations. Could you give any kind of an update on what they're sort of looking at and what improvements you believe, Governor, really need to happen in order to keep our seniors better protected?
Yeah, there are a lot of fraudsters, often using the telephone, sometimes using the internet, going after our seniors, preying on people who we got to do a better job of protecting. Either they're selling them, energy plans that are supposed to save you, electricity rates, and they don't. Trying to sell you other things that don't match up. Do not give your ID number. Do not give your Social Security. Do not give your credit card number. And I'm going to be working closely with the legislature to see what else we can be doing to protect our seniors.
This was, a really interesting but kind of a more generic question, Governor. It came from Sandy. I don't know where you live, Sandy. I apologize. But Sandy had this question. 4 years ago, Governor, you were elected in a very tight race, and no one could have predicted that COVID was on the way. His question is, how did the actuality of becoming governor compare to what you thought it was going to be like?
Oh, Sandy. Look, I got elected thinking state's in a constant fiscal crisis, a lot of people leaving the state, a lot of companies thinking about leaving the state. And I really thought as a business person, you needed somebody who could get our budget balanced and give a business community confidence. This is a place you want to be. And 9 months later, we have that attack of COVID. I remember that nurse in January, you could see the terror in people's faces. And it's not something you prepare for. But if you have a life of experiences, you know what you know and you know what you don't know. And I went and found here in Connecticut, we have a lot of the best and the brightest. And I was able to get them around the table to help us navigate, you know, relatively successfully through what was a horrific situation.
So only because it dipped out a little bit there, Governor, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, but essentially you went into it, you know, from a business standpoint and wanting to achieve having a better budget and getting us in a fiscally more healthy place in your 4 years in office. And you feel you've achieved that at least.
Well, yeah, to Sandy's point, when I was elected, that was my priority on that fiscal side, give mm-hmm. people confidence and get businesses growing. Then when COVID hit, you got to change gears, U-turn on the spot. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I had some of the best and the brightest here in the terms of the healthcare community and epidemiologists and the business community. We got them around the table to help us navigate through this crisis.
And Governor Lamont, this was in recent news. I know there are talks going on in one specific school district where they're discussing the potential of adding three armed officers, three armed security guards for their school district after the Uvalde, Texas shooting and the killings at that elementary school. Cindy in Westport had a question. I know Westport is one of the towns that has considered, you know, do we do more? Do we do less? What are we doing? So her question is, Governor, do you think in your professional standpoint, do you think schools should consider investing in armed security guards? Or do you think this is more of a mental health issue that we should be investing more in mental health services, or a little bit of both?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I don't think it's mutually exclusive by any means, Melissa. This is something that I think is really important for each school district to decide for themselves. They've got the resources to do what they think they need to do to keep people safe. And almost as importantly, to make people feel safe so that they know they can go to school safely. Some schools have metal detectors, some have resource officers, some have resource officers who are armed. Every district and community is very different, but I'd like to think at the end of the day, I want everybody knowing they can be in school. It's a safe place, and I don't want anybody to question that.
Governor, a question from Diane in Norwalk. Governor, why was the Greenwich I-95 reconstruction project postponed, but Norwalk's was not?
I got to look into that. But look, Department of Transportation, say, has 50 really important projects all in a queue. And we were slowing them down a couple years ago because we didn't have the transportation revenues. Now we're speeding them up because of the infrastructure bill and what we're able to provide out of our own funding. So we are speeding up projects like that. And if there's one down in the Greenwich area that ought to be moving up the queue, because of our resources, it will be moving up the queue.
And we're talking this morning to Governor Lamont, taking your questions. Another question, Governor, we saw in recent news that Ansonia's been working on their new senior center, which is in the same building as their new police headquarters in town. And there was a lot of efforts to get Derby to get in on that deal and to pay for some of the costs. Derby said no, essentially. And now it sounds like both mayors have submitted grant money, or they've submitted an application for grant grant money to pay for the senior center. And this question, while it came anonymously from somebody in Ansonia, the question was, what is the likelihood of getting that grant money? And I think their question is sort of surrounding the surplus of money that Connecticut has. You know, what is the chance of getting that grant money?
Better when people work together, better when the community puts up a share of that. It shows that it's really important to Ansonia Derby, the communities there. I've got to see what's on the bond agenda in terms of that particular item. Obviously, as you can imagine, there's a lot of requests. We can't satisfy all of them. But when I see communities working together for the common good, that's a big plus.
And speaking of programs, this was another one that came in from a teacher. I guess this was from a teacher in Fairfield. Thank you so much for the question. Birth to Three and child care program expansion happened last year where they passed a law. The legislature passed a law that made the Birth to Three program cost free to Connecticut families. I think the question this morning from this person is, are there going to be more programs, more expansion of programs offered to families to pay for child care, but also more child care opportunities because it's hard to get your kids into an affordable program right now?
So, Melissa, as you know, we've had the biggest expansion of daycare and child care in our history. That combined with paid family leave so that moms, new moms, can spend some time at home with their newborns as well, trying to do what we can. I think at this stage, my point of view, let's see what works. Give me a year or so to take a look. Let me see if it's making a difference. I'll tell you one way it's made a difference, not only just in terms of the well-being of that baby, but also we have more young parents, more young moms getting back to the workforce as well. That's the other thing about daycare is it allows people to get back to work. Our labor participation rate went up last month. At the same time, our unemployment rate went down. That's a very good combination.
And we have another question from Annie in Shelton. Annie wants to know, what are we doing to better protect bear populations in Connecticut? That was the question she asked. But just to give some context for people who are not sure, there have been two bear killings in Connecticut this year. And one seemed pretty justified. The other is kind of the verdict is still out on that. But in either case, both bears became too comfortable, essentially, too comfortable with people's homes and properties to the point that they became a threat. So that's why the state had to eliminate them, essentially. But I think Annie's question here, I think, is referring to questions if DEEP has enough protections in place for bears so that we can, you know, we don't have to kill bears, if there's a way that we can better protect them.
Yeah, Annie, I've got to get you together with Katie Dykes, put together a team. Let's face it, we have many more bears today than we had just 5 and 10 years ago. As you point out, more and more of them are becoming domesticated in the sense they feel more and more comfortable around, you know, homes, around people, around pets. We could do more to not let that happen. Keep them out of your trash and garbage. Don't entice them in any way. We have to think more thoughtfully about what we do about the expanding bear population in general. So let's get together with Katie Dykes, who runs our environment and energy, and come up with a solution.
It's a good idea. I mean, because part of it, Governor, is I would think, and this is more my personal question, is I feel like some people are sort of complacent. Like the idea of taking your bird feeder down. I can remember growing up in the 90s and you always had a bird feeder out. It didn't matter what time of the year, you always had them out. And the idea of feeding the birds. And it was only, I would say, in my college years that you started to hear, hey, could you not leave the bird feeders out, you know, because it attracts bears, and sort of, but that sort of gets lost on people if you've been doing things for 50-60 years and now that's a big change because it's attracting bears. I'm wondering if we as people have just become almost the mindset of, it's not going to be me, it's not going to be a bear that comes into my house, but with that mentality, that's why we're seeing more and more of these bear interactions.
Yes, and the fact that we have five times as many bears, put that into the mix as well, and they're foraging. And you went camping with your mom and dad. I mean, you always knew to secure your food, don't leave it out there, because it was, you know, you're feeding the appetite.
Right, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Governor Lamont, unfortunately, we have run out of time. But again, I thank you so much for coming back on just days after having you on before. And I really, really appreciate you taking our listener questions. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa. And everybody stay cool. It's hot out there.
We're chatting now with Krista Carnes, who's our social media consultant. Krista, welcome back. How are you?
I'm well. And you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Today's topic is a good one. I really like it because I was saying to my listeners earlier on, I'll admit it to anybody. I'm really not good with shorthand. Okay. I know what LOL means, but like the other day there was a shorthand that my husband, my brother-in-law, and my sister were all talking about, and I had zero clue what they were talking about. And my husband's like, oh, you got to really spell it out for Melissa. And it's just because I'm just not in the know in that sense. I always think I'm in the wrong generation. I was born into the wrong generation. But I like this topic today because I'm sure a lot of people would love to be more in the know when it comes to shorthand and trying to keep our kids safe. So what are some of the things that you're keeping an eye on and that we can inform people about?
Well, I think there's always been a language. Kids have always tried to come up with their own codes for getting, to communicate with their friends. So
totally.
They, fly on or their families and stuff. But obviously with the cell phones, it can be, now you can have images and emojis and things like that. So, I think some of it is just more for your own knowledge. If you hear them, I was with my niece yesterday and I said something. She goes, "Oh, that's bussin'." And I'm like,
"That's what?" See, no. Oh my gosh, I just understood slap the other day. Like I just understood slap the other day. My sister said, "Oh man, that slaps." I'm like, what's slapping? Like, I was so confused. And she's like, oh, Melissa, come on, slaps. It means that it's like, that's amazing. That's awesome. I'm like, then just say right, that. Then just say that. But so what did she say? Bussin? What does bussin mean?
B-U-S-S-I-N, from what my research. But I was like, are you talking about a yellow bus, like a school bus? We're moving people? And she's like, no, Krista, it just means really cool. And I was like,
then just say that. Excellent.
Right.
These
are a lot of this is Snapchat, TikTok, these really fast, these really fast social media platforms where they're just, it's hysterical in many ways. But I think there is a potential for some red flags. The Today Show just did a segment on this. You can definitely find it online. I think, Melissa, you might post some of these articles or just share them, because a lot of times kids are trying to communicate, behaviors that would be concerning. And if you were to just peruse your kids' cell phone or text threads or look over their shoulder and see something, in my house, I pay for the phone, so I get to look whenever I want.
Right. That's how it was in our house, too. Yep.
Yeah. I'm pretty judicious when I do it because I don't want to invade. But at the same time, if I have concerns. So, talking about, I'm not even going to attempt the acronym, but it's like parent over shoulder.
POS, like a helicopter meaning, parent, essentially.
Well, and it's like if they're sitting in the room, I can't.
Oh,
like, don't text me anything.
Tell. Okay. So they're telling their friends like, hey, POS, which means parent over shoulder. I got it.
Yeah, don't text me anything, a video, an image, or just even words, because, basically my parents are standing right behind me watching. It could be there's some definite evidence of kids trying to procure drugs or alcohol. And there's all these, emoji symbols that people are using to try to convey what they have, what they want. I don't know. I think you have to have some sort of – You have to be engaged in that behavior. But again, it's street drugs. It's, the Today Show segment told this really sad story about this young girl who had started taking, Xanax or some sort of pills. And when she found somebody online who said that they had it for her and it was laced with fentanyl and she died.
And she died.
And right. Because, so all that messaging that we give them about don't take anything you don't know of, but they're looking for it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's ways of communicating that you might not realize. There's also, in my mind, a very scary amount of sexuality-based content that they're communicating. I'm available. This is who I'm looking for. What am I open to doing? Send me a pic. But there's all code, so you would never... You wouldn't see it unless you were looking for
it. But some of it, though, Krista, so, like, I watched that Today Show segment, and I read the article, the one that you and I had discussed. And you know, for example, kids are now going to, like, pictures, for example. And when I say pictures, I mean emojis. So for anyone who's tuning in and you're like, what's an emoji? It's these small little graphics that people can use in their text messages. I think a lot of people are familiar with them. My parents love putting emojis in all their text messages. Some of the emojis that they use, like, for example, heroin, depicted as a snake or a brown heart, cocaine as a snowflake. So, like, some of them stood out to me. I'm like, of course cocaine is a snowflake, because you always talk about the white powder, the snow, the white stuff. You know, obviously a pill emoji symbolizing, like, Percocet, Adderall, oxycodone, you know, marijuana being a tree. Like, some of them I think you can probably put two and two together and go, what's happening here? But you're right. When you talk about things like sexuality, you know, and relationships or whatever is going on with your kids outside of maybe drug use or alcohol, it might be a little bit harder to pick up on those things. So how do you suggest you do it?
I think you just try to stay up on as much lingo as you possibly can by, like, these articles are, you know, people that put these lists together, and some of them are from, you know, services that will help you monitor your kids' social media in a more, you know, in a way that they flag questionable content and bring it to your attention. I do not work for this company, but I have used them. It's called Bark. I think it's bark.us. It's a service. So anyways, they have a lot of content on their website. And they're constantly updating, because, as I think you and I talked about, like, the second we know it, they're going to change it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and at the end of the day, of course, the biggest thing is to try and establish a relationship with your kids so that they are open and honest and they're not being sneaky. But I don't consider myself, I wasn't a sneaky teenager. I didn't really run any fast ones past my parents. But you still had conversations, you know, like, I can remember being in high school and being 14, 15 years old. And of course, you talk to your girlfriends about, like, ooh, you know, like, this guy, and, like, what would you do? And so on and so forth. And again, I pretty much consider myself very, I'd say, lackluster. I was very lame, to say the least. I was just not, I just was not what you'd call. But even so, if you have a kid like that, you know, I think expect that they're going to have these kinds of conversations and make it comfortable for them to talk about it. I think that's really the bigger thing versus cracking a code, is make it comfortable for them to approach you.
Absolutely. And I think it's about having, you know, talk about what makes a healthy relationship and, you know, what, you know, if, you know, and you can say, you know, sexuality is a healthy human activity. And depending on, you know, if that's how you want to have that conversation, like, you can encourage, this is safe. This is, you know, it brings up a lot of opportunity for talks about consent and what, you know, what makes you feel good, and it should never feel bad. Like, I guess I'm more concerned about these types of contents being used on social media apps.
Yes.
Where you might be interacting with people you don't know.
I agree with
right?
you. So, Krista, before we wrap things up, what would you suggest? I know you and I were just talking about making conversation comfortable for teenagers, but that, do you think that works for every realm of what they're talking about online?
I think some of it is not reacting as a parent, right? Like, if you want to create an open channel for conversation, you need to be as cool as you can. I mean, obviously, in a crisis, if somebody is, you know, if there's a real threat, like, that's a different story. But overall, you know, if your kid is generally well behaved, if you're, you know, and you just say, like, I want to know these things. I was actually thinking during the break, like, you know, if I promise not to use the term, tell me what this means. Do you know what I mean? Because they always, like, roll their eyes at you, or, oh, you're so, you know. But, you know, asking them to show you their TikTok, or show me where they use this term, or, you know, what does that mean? I'm just curious. I promise not to use it. You know, that might sort of get the conversation going.
How are your kids with that?
They're pretty good. I mean, I occasionally check their TikToks and stuff. I watched them make something that I was actually really horrified by. And we had a very frank, very good conversation about why I felt that the content that they chose to mimic that they had seen on a TikTok, and they just was like basically recreated their own video to this sort of song thing. And, you know, I was like, that's it. Like, now I'm checking more. You know what I mean? Like, once they've crossed the line, then I feel like you were saying inserting yourself. Okay, until I'm confident that, you know how to make good choices online, I'm going to be checking more often.
And I understood. Yeah, and I was going
to
say, I think it's an opportunity, like you said, it's a reaction just saying, hey, you know what, so you're learning. I know I'm trying this actively, even with my own four-year-old, and of course, oh, God help me, by the time he gets onto social media, what the world will be like. But I know we actively, whenever we're like, hey, you don't do this, and he immediately thinks, oh, sorry, I'm like, don't be sorry, this is a learning thing, but just know that I now have to just check that, like, versus you're in trouble. I think the conversation has to change to you are learning versus you are in trouble. Like, if you know your kids well enough and you know that they are either following the crowd or following a trend or they really don't know exactly what they are doing, I think a lot of times what pushes kids to come up with shorthand or to feel like they have to hide things or to feel like they've got to be secretive is because every time they blink the wrong way, they get in trouble, quote unquote. So even right. Just changing that conversation, that narrative of you're in trouble to no, you're learning and you messed up. You messed up here. I've messed up and you're messing up.
Or you try to get to them before, like take one of these articles, highlight a few that you think are, you know, if you were to see them, I mean, you know, kill yourself is one, KYK or something like that. Like there's one in there. I'm sorry. I'm sort of.
You're fine. You and I are old, Krista. It's okay. It's fine. Yeah. We aren't in the know. It's fine.
Yeah. KYS. Like, you know, like there's some stuff. And like, so if you were to take this article and say, hey, listen, I was reading this article, you know, they always try to tell parents what to do. Look at some of these things. What do you think about them? How could you ever see yourself using this? Have you ever seen it? Because I think that puts it in their minds, not that you're going to try to catch them, but like this stuff can be damaging when you think it's funny. Because again, their brains aren't developed. They're just kids. They're teenagers.
Exactly.
They're impulsive. Right. And, you know, you can cross a line very quickly that you didn't even know was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also think, you know, they're on these chat rooms, they're on gaming devices where people can like message them. Some of this stuff should raise a flag for them and empowering them to know when something raises a flag, even if, when they feel it in their body, when it doesn't feel right, encouraging them to acknowledge that and make choices or come to talk to you about it at that point. It's a real preventative thing. So let's just flood them with information.
Yeah, it's true. And get them engaged in the conversation. I think it's a really great point, Krista. And I'm so glad you brought this topic to our show. If anybody has any questions for you, either whether it has to do with this or if they have a question about the online world and they want to contact you, what's the best way to do that?
You can hit me up on Twitter at KristaCarnes22 or just email me, Krista@KristaCarnes.com. Not everybody's on Twitter. I get it.
Krista, I always appreciate that you come on here and we're with you every couple of weeks. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. I look forward to it. Krista Carnes here on WICC.